Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
We lost our humanity. We lost our dignity. We got punished for something we did not do.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells the story of the Black 14.
Our young lives were flipped upside down.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, this is the Global News Podcast feed, but we have something different for you right now and for the next 4 weeks. I want to introduce to you the Global Story. The host is with me, Katia Adler. Welcome. Tell us about the Global Story.
Well, thank you for having me. First of all, thank you for having us in your feed. The Global Story. So it's a brand new-ish, we're quite new still, podcast. We're your sister, really. And the idea is because you tell us what's going on in the news, you tell us why it matters. And we then take one news story every day and we look at it in detail. And we also try and look at it from different perspectives. I mean, it's the global story. So we try to surprise you with different angles, for example, and just sort of just dig a little deeper down the headlines. It feels, Jackie, I think you and I have talked about this before, everything feels like it's going so fast in the world and there are so many bad news stories. It can feel a bit overwhelming at times. So the idea of the global story is to take a breath and then with some brilliant BBC colleagues, experts in their field, we sort of, you know, quietly have a look at what's actually going on and why it matters.
And what sorts of stories are we covering then?
All sorts. It keeps me on my toes, from Taylor Swift's impact on local economies and whether she could actually influence the outcome of the US presidential election in November. We've looked at electric vehicles and that Tesla's been given a run for its money from Chinese car makers, for example. Obviously, we've looked at Israel-Gaza from all sorts of angles. We try and get a lot of human stories in, as well as geopolitical stories as well. So, and then we turn to our colleagues at the BBC, who, as you know, often devote a huge amount of time to researching specialist documentaries or specialist reports. And so what we've got here for you today, it's all about the Bengal famine back in 1943. Why now? Well, because the survivors of that famine are leaving us. So there's a rush against time to talk to them. And it's never been talked about from their perspective, the people who suffered most.
So let's hear this week's edition of The Global Story.
This is The Global Story. One story in detail, 5 days a week from the world's leading broadcaster. Today, a story of searing human suffering in the dying days of the British Empire. A famine thought to have killed at least 3 million people in Bengal at the height of the Second World War.
Many died of cholera, smallpox and malaria that year. A lot of people simply died of hunger too.
Have you heard of the Bengal famine? If not, you're really not alone. More than 80 years on, it's noteworthy that so little attention has been paid to such a massive tragedy and the people who lived through it, not only in the West, but in the place where it happened, in what's now India and Bangladesh.
The story is written by the people who it didn't affect.
They were not allowed to use the word famine.
They don't allow this to be broadcast.
Today, we hear from survivors whose voices have never been broadcast before and the people racing to record their stories before it's too late. Along the way, we'll ask, who gets to write history and why is the Bengal famine such a divisive subject? With me today is Kavita Puri, a BBC journalist who's made a brand new 5-part podcast for the BBC called 3 Million, covering the Bengal famine of 1943. Now, Kavita, a lot of your work at the BBC has looked at British South Asian identities and perspectives and how they've been shaped by colonial history.
Yes. So about 10 years ago, I was very aware that there was a lot of South Asian diasporic history that hadn't been recorded before. When I looked in the archives at the BBC and more widely, it wasn't there. So I started recording the stories of people who came to Britain in the post-war years. And then after that, I looked at people in Britain who'd gone through the partition of India for the 70th anniversary, so colonial British and British South Asian. And again, that was a story that had never been looked at from the perspective of the people who lived through it, who live in our country. And so now I'm looking at, again, another bit of colonial history, the Bengal famine, but trying to look at it through the perspective of the lived experience.
So let's have a look at the famine. You sort of stumbled across that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I had heard about millions of people dying and the Bengal famine. I really didn't know that much more. And I came to it really totally accidentally. I was recording people who'd lived through the partition of India, and I was interviewing a woman who'd been part of the colonial British class, a woman called Pamela. And she, as a kind of aside, and it is quite disturbing, had talked about vultures on the streets of Calcutta in 1943.
There was no place you could go where you didn't see dead bodies and vultures. It was revolting, actually, as the vultures used to come down and eat these dead bodies, and there were dead people all over Calcutta.
These scenes of horror were unfolding on Calcutta streets, and yet she said she carried on her life going to clubs. It was also a time where there were hundreds of thousands of Allied soldiers who were defending Calcutta from the Japanese. And, you know, I heard testimonies of Allied soldiers who were having a grand time. They were in restaurants eating delicious food, drinking in cocktail bars with well-to-do Indians who never wanted for food. It was this kind of shocking tale of two cities. And I wondered, with the 80th anniversary, if it was possible to piece together the story of the famine from a wide range of Bengali voices.
I'm really struck by what you say about a tale of two cities there. You know, the lived reality of the British colonial officers and wealthy Indians who were living in comfort, and then the stark contrast of those so poor, they were struggling to survive or dying and being pecked up by those vultures.
Yeah, and it really was at the time. And these were not people who were beggars. These were people who had come in from the rural countryside, who were fishermen, they were agricultural workers, they were labourers, they were artisans. There were so many mothers with children, and they died in plain sight. You know, some people that I spoke to, like Partha Mitter, he was one. He was a young boy, and he would look out from the gates of his house and he would see what was going on.
I would see from behind the gates that these emaciated, you know, women with children would come, and the bodies, you know, were so thin. They were desperate. I mean, they were just coming in streams.
Do you remember what they were asking for?
Oh, yes. In Bengali, it's a ektu pandema. Mother, give me a little bit of that watery bit of the rice.
They were not even asking for rice. They were asking for the dregs.
They can't, because they're so desperate. They thought that people wouldn't have the rice even to give them.
Partha Mitter says he never wanted for rice in his home. He lived in a very grand house, but he saw this. And it's really interesting that plea that he remembers, Fan Dao, the plea for the starch water of rice. Pretty much every Bengali I spoke to remembers that. It's a memory that's held by the people who observed the famine. They were not the people who suffered the most.
What would you say was the cause of the famine, right? I mean, there's many historical instances. It's contested, complicated.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a cause. It's hugely contested, the causes and which were the most important causes. But I think the way to think of the famine is to think of the context, which is the Second World War. The Japanese were so close to the Bengali border. There was a huge fear that they might invade British India. That's why the Allied soldiers came to Calcutta in their hundreds of thousands. So they needed to be fed. The colonial government was printing money in order to pay for all this with a sterling IOU in London. So inflation was incredibly high. And rice, the staple food, was put under huge amounts of strain, not least because after Burma fell, rice that was normally brought into Calcutta from Burma was no longer there. And if you were an ordinary person in the rural areas who were just about surviving anyhow, it was very, very difficult to afford rice at that time.
Isn't there an added strand to this, Kavita, that I learnt about in your podcast, that the British wanted to ensure that in the case of Japanese invasion, they wouldn't be able to get their hands on food and sustenance for their soldiers, right?
That's right. So they'd seen how the Japanese had advanced through Southeast Asia by using local supplies, so transport and food, in order to fuel their advance. And so in order to prevent that happening in British India, they went to the Bengal Delta, to the villages and towns around there, and took away surplus rice, food supplies and boats. And what this meant was it strained the already fragile economy, but with tens of thousands of boats being confiscated or destroyed, it meant that fishermen couldn't fish, farmers couldn't go to their land, artisans couldn't sell their wares, and critically, rice couldn't be moved around.
Fair to say this was a man-made famine?
Well, at the same time, in October 1942, there was a devastating cyclone that left tens of thousands of people dead. But it also hit some of the districts where rice was produced. And so the crop was destroyed. And so people argue primarily a man-made famine, but there was also a natural disaster.
Why isn't the Bengal famine more widely known? Would you go as far to say that it's intentionally ignored, first of all in the UK and the wider West, but also there's an interesting story to tell about South Asia itself, right?
Mm. It is a really difficult bit of our colonial history that complicates our narrative of our own war story. And so much of who we are in Britain is tied up with our war story. And then there is the question of our wartime leader, Winston Churchill, and did he do enough to alleviate the famine once he knew about it in the middle of the war? And again, Winston Churchill embodies who we are as a nation. You know, he fought heroically against the fascists and we won. I would say that history is complicated and that we should be able to hold different narratives at the same time.
What I found really interesting that you tell us in your podcast is that not only is this famine little spoken about in the UK, for example, but also in South Asia.
I would say it isn't, it isn't. So there is no memorial or museum, not even a plaque to these 3 million people who died anywhere in the world. And if you think that perhaps there might be in India or Bangladesh, and it just doesn't exist. But it is remembered in other ways. It's remembered in iconic Indian films. It's remembered in photographs. It's remembered in fiction. But again, this is history that is told by the observers to famine, not in the voices of those who suffered the most. And it's quite interesting because I spoke to Professor Shruti Kapila, who is at Cambridge University, and she said perhaps one of the reasons why the memory of those people haven't been so well remembered is because the 1940s on the Indian subcontinent was this kind of decade of death, mass death. You had the famine, and then you had the Great Calcutta Killings in 1946, horrific communal violence between Muslims and Hindus in the run-up to partition. And then you have the partition of India.
As the new dominions of Pakistan and India take over their own affairs, communal hatred flares up in the Punjab. Fleeing from their looted, blood-stained towns comes a new exodus.
Those that died in the famine were the voiceless, the forgotten, the poorest. And that's what makes your work and your podcast so outstanding, in the way that these are voices that have never been really heard before. It's never been told in their voices.
They were the poorest and most vulnerable in society. And yes, I think, you know, people I spoke to, perhaps that's why they haven't been remembered, or even their stories recorded.
It was wartime, right? And there was an effort at the time to cover up what was happening.
Yeah, there was censorship on the ground in India. The emergency rules passed by the government of India wouldn't allow the use of the word famine in publications because they feared that the enemy, particularly the Japanese, would use it as propaganda against them, which they did.
There was, though, one journalist in Bengal called Ian Stevens, right? And he did break the story to the world.
I really have very few visual memories of what was certainly the worst horror of all in terms of death and suffering, that is to say, of the Bengal famine. I felt a sense of outrage at the appalling suffering which was occurring and the inertia of the government in coping with it.
Ian Stevens was the editor of the Statesman newspaper, which was a British-owned English-language newspaper in Calcutta, but read in Delhi and very well regarded. And he discovered a loophole in the censorship rules, which didn't mention anything about photographs. So he sent his photographer out onto the streets of Calcutta. He very quickly came back with really distressing photos, and they chose some which would be palatable. But even those, they're pretty full on. And he published them on August the 22nd, 1943. It wasn't long before people in London and soon America knew what was happening. And he became emboldened and started writing scathing editorials and publishing more photographs. And by mid-September, he was saying, this is a man-made famine.
What about Indian writers and journalists? You know, how were they covering the famine?
Indian papers were reporting on it, but they were also, some of them, subject to the censorship rules as well. So it wasn't very easy for them. But one pamphlet really kind of shook me when I found it. It was by the writer and artist Chitraprasad Bhattacharya. And he had gone to Midnapore, which was one of the areas really affected by the cyclone and the famine. And he did sketches in ink of the victims and survivors, but he also gave a small biography of them, who they were, where they came from, and he gave their names. And it was the first name of a victim that I found, and I found it incredibly moving. The name of the person was Kshitra Mahan Naik. The picture that Chitraprasad drew, it's quite disturbing. He was already being eaten alive by what looked like a wolf. The man no longer looks like a man anymore. The number 3 million can just wash over you. But to find that name was so important. And it just reminded me that to hear survivor testimonies, to name names, is to give dignity to those people who died.
Absolutely. You've helped us understand, Kavita, the sheer scale of that suffering and also why this tragedy isn't better remembered. Coming up, I'll be speaking to Kavita about the race to speak to survivors of the Bengal famine before it's too late. So not just putting a name to the suffering, but giving the suffering a voice as well. If you're enjoying what we're doing and you'd like to hear more in-depth storytelling, remember at the end of this episode to search for The Global Story wherever you found this podcast.
In 1969, a plan to show support for an anti-racism protest turned the lives of 14 promising black student athletes upside down.
I don't think we realized what the true flavor of Wyoming was back in 1969.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells the story of the Black 14.
There was a rebel Confederate flag being flown.
It was different. It was definitely different.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
This is The Global Story. I've been talking to BBC journalist Kavita Puri about the incredible scale of suffering and death caused by the Bengal famine. Kavita, what I'd really like to hear about now is the huge amount of work that you've also been involved in recording, preserving the voices of witnesses and survivors 80 years after the famine, something that just has never, ever happened to date. You couldn't get a visa to go yourself to talk, right?
No, which is completely heartbreaking because I had found survivors. Like, this is my whole mission was to speak to survivors and look into their eyes and see their faces, and I wasn't able to go. I haven't given up hope, but at the time it was hard for BBC employees to get a visa to go to India.
So tell me then about the man that you describe as the memory collector.
He really is a memory collector. His name is Soylen Sarkar. He's 72 and he travels around the Bengali countryside with his backpack and his open-toed sandals and his roll-up cigarettes. And he is basically looking for survivors of the famine. And he records their testimonies with paper and pen, kind of pretty old school, really. And he's collected over 60 testimonies. And as one of the people who kind of travel with him told me, you know, in the countryside is the largest living archive in the world, and no one has gone to ask people there what it was like. This is what happened when he went to speak to one of the survivors.
When I went to him and asked about the famine, he passed into tears. The old man said then, I am waiting for so much long time that anyone will come to me and I will tell him the story. Man, I still can remember his voice. Apni eto deri kore kelo erien. Why you are so late to come to me?
So many of the people that Soylent spoke to hadn't talked about it, but they hadn't really even been asked by their own families. And so sometimes they were recounting their stories for the first time to him. And these are some of the testimonies that Soylent has recorded, but they obviously spoke to him in Bengali and they're voiced here for us by actors.
We had always had poverty here, but that year the crisis was devastating. Lots of people started begging to survive. Young girls or newly married women didn't usually beg. The mothers would go instead. Still, this is hunger we're talking about. How many rules can you follow?
Many wives whose husbands couldn't feed them went back to their fathers' houses. If they weren't taken back, then they killed themselves.
People also talked to Soylent about things. I don't know if they felt guilty about them, but they told him stories that didn't always reflect them in a good light and how they themselves profited from the famine, like this man who had some money. He was a landowner in his village.
Since we had money, we bought up a lot of people's land for cheap at the time. We got land for nothing in exchange for rice and dal or a little money. We got all the land registered in our name. Soon after hunger struck, people began to get sick. One household was left without a single heir. We took their land.
That's powerful, Kavita. Do you feel that this really is a time where we are beginning to hear different narratives about colonial history, but about so many things in the world, different voices and challenging the traditional narratives that have gone before? I'm thinking about that huge period that we've had in the US, but in many countries across Europe, including the UK, where, you know, statues are beginning to be torn down of individuals who beforehand were seen as well-respected founders of towns, cities, universities.
I think you're right. I think things are changing and I feel lucky to be alive when that change is happening. I have always approached this kind of history through eyewitness accounts because I think there is something about hearing events through people's voices that gets you behind the statistics. Every single person who died, there is a story. And I think that when you hear people's stories, you can connect with people and you can feel empathy or some kind of emotion. And I hope that's going to be the case with the famine. You know, I say it's history. It's not history for some people. Some people are still alive who remember that. Some of them live in our country today. Like Pamela's still alive. She remembers it. It's not their history. It's their life. They recall it very, very clearly. But we have to find a way and we have to find a language in which we can talk about these things. And I don't think it should be about, you know, guilt or blame. But I do think we should know because it's our history. It was British India. It's British history. And it's part of the story of the war too. And I'm really happy that the Imperial War Museum and their new galleries does feature the Bengal famine. But it's never thought about in terms of our war story.
But that's new, right, Kavita? I mean, when I went to the Imperial War Museum when I was at school, which was a little while ago, it didn't feature then.
It's very new, but I also think you know, the younger generation are asking really, really different questions. And, you know, they're more comfortable with the complexities of history. But I also think it's significant that the third generation in the diaspora are also asking questions. It's because it's their history. You know, we will at some time be learning about this in schools. We're not in England yet. It's not compulsory. And I just hope we can do it in a way that's not so fraught, because these things happened. You know, we should be able to see that in a textbook.
I think one of the valuable lessons from your work, Kavita, on the famine is that, yes, we are beginning to hear different narratives and different voices, and the UK is revisiting its colonial past and looking at it with different eyes. But again, we might make assumptions. So if I think about the colonial past, I, you know, think about people who were oppressed or who had riches taken from their country, perhaps. But it was quite levelling. One of the main points of your podcast is that you say that for those in you know, in India who were colonized by the British, the main thing that they associate with colonial rule is nothing to do with politics. It's hunger.
Yeah. So Professor Shruti Kapila, who I spoke to, she said one of the enduring legacies of empire is hunger. That's her view. And I was quite surprised to hear that. No, I hadn't thought of it in that way, because the 1943 famine isn't the only famine. There were other famines too. And, you know, the reasons for that are incredibly contested. But, you know, they happened during Britain's presence in India. And so she talks about freedom from the British being freedom from hunger, and how the memory of the famine has played into agricultural policy today. And that is certainly how they see the legacy of empire.
Kavita, thank you for guiding us through the complexities and putting voices to those who suffered in the Bengal famine. Thank you.
Thank you, Katia.
And thank you all for listening. Remember, normally the global story won't be in the Global News podcast. If you'd like to hear more episodes from us, and we hope that you will, search for the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcast, and don't forget to leave us a review.